Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got Pernell and Chris. How are you two doing?
Adequate.
Fucking yeah.
Fucking yeah.
No one said that. Don't listen to AI and generated garbage. No one said that.
That would not be the first time I've been accused of being a robot.
Are you a robot?
No, I'm not.
You know,
I mean, if I was, that would be fine.
A robot?
What?
Our new friend, Andy Sperry, is here. Andy, how are you doing?
Oh, wow. Hype. What's up, everybody? I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Here in person this week. Normally, you're sending in emails, but we roped you in. We got you here for two reviews tonight. Are you excited?
I'm so stoked. I got diarrhea that I'm holding in right now because of how excited I am. So
that would fit in on the Thursday show, yeah.
Oh, shoot.
This is the Tuesday show. Yeah, we keep it classy around here.
Oh, Diarrhea Thursdays. My bad. I didn't get the notice. Like I said, usually I write in, so
it's the best day of the week. Let me tell you, boy. Get that Metamucil in your butt. Oh, right? Yeah.
Like how I just earlier had conversations with the other co-hosts of, like, we got to keep down the dirty talk. Like, it's getting a bit too gross and a bit too raunchy. And that's how we start this.
Sir, I'll have you know, that's not gross. That's a physical condition that people suffer when they're lactose intolerant and they eat too much ice cream.
My bad. I'm doing great.
So insensitive.
How dare you refer to
all the rest of it.
So, Andy, how are you doing? It is good to have you on the show. What brings you here? What led you to coming on and hanging out with us?
Great to be here. Do you want the full story or the quick version?
We got time to kill.
I feel like the quick version was just like you asking me to come on the show, and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing anything tonight.
Yeah, that's
I am making note that Joe at this point in the show says we got plenty of time.
Yeah, right now we do.
Oh, yep.
At this moment.
We are three minutes into the show, Chris. We got time right now, but that's about it.
Right.
The whole point of usually allocating time is knowing that time gets eaten up later.
Yeah, true. That's never stopped.
I would argue that time is eaten up at all times.
That is very correct, by the Langoliers.
Ooh. Man, that was a crazy movie.
Yes, it was. You only see the monsters for the last like 20 minutes or so, and they were
they cool? With
cheesy CGI. I thought they were, personally, but people look back on it now and are like, man, what terrible CGI. Or no, it wasn't CGI, it was just like general effects. That was before CGI. And it was just like, yeah. I'm like, no, they freaked me the hell out. That's for damn sure. They had freaking chain, not chains, but like serrated blade mouths. And they were whirring like a... Yeah, that's right. I pulled that word, that chestnut out.
Are we running out of time right now?
We're almost out of time. Oh, my God.
We got to wrap this up.
It's been a good show. We missed reviews this episode. We'll have to take care of it next time. Yeah, 5 minute
music
long
this
episode.
Week is by the music this week is by the Langoliers.
Are they a band?
How is that not a band?
They sound like they should be.
I listen to them.
You could even spell the ears ears at the end of the word. The Langoliers.
The Langoliers.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, you have a new side project now. Putting you in charge.
Well, at the
that.
Very least, I came up with a title for the episode.
The Langoliers. I'm ready for it.
God,
I miss Brooke, so I miss Brooke, so I'm going to give myself an oh my god.
Oh, that's a sound clip we need.
Right?
Brooke saying, oh my god.
I'm gonna have to scour an episode and find that. We only have
Hello?
That's the only Brooke clip we have.
It works.
It is nice.
We have Norg though.
Listen here, fuck snort.
What happened to being clean?
Just saying fuck is okay. It's just the toilet humor, literally.
I'll have Chewbop bip doop bip.
So yeah, it's just the four of us this week. Well, this episode, next episode is going to be fucking jam-packed. A bunch of people are going to be there next episode for episode 900.
Sadly, nice. I won't be, though, potentially. We'll find out. But
we'll need to call
I will
Purnell.
Say,
Chris, are you
just
be there?
In case.
I will need to be reminded.
Sounds good.
Just in case I'm not there, I'm going to say happy 900th now. And if I make it, I can say it twice, bitch. Happy 900th episode. Well-deserved. I feel like it was only yesterday we were at 800 because, oh my God, time is no
illusion. I think it was yesterday, actually.
It is yesterday. We do 100 shows a day.
Yeah,
so.
It's getting there. But yeah, we are out of time. They're... It has been a good episode. Thank you all so much for coming on, hanging. Just out of time.
Tune in next week for the 1,000th episode.
Oh my
God.
That's probably going to happen eventually, the 1,000th
episode. We'll be celebrating 900 episodes of video game reviews and 100 further episodes of Langoliers discussion. The band, not the movie.
Yeah.
I remember who was the guy. Oh, it was Bronson Tenchu. That's who was on there. The unexpected. Like, wow, he was on that after Perfect Strangers?
I don't remember anyone who was in that.
He's the only one that you need to remember is Bronson Tenchu. It was a big deal at the time. I was like, wait, this is the first thing he did after Perfect Strangers.
Wow.
Andy, have you seen the Langoliers?
No.
Oh, I wonder if I could play that theme song for music tonight.
What, from the movie?
We have a good friend named Mustin. Who did a cover of the Perfect Strangers theme song.
Oh, yeah, play that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, so music this episode, we are done. Thank you so much for coming on, hanging out.
Joe, you got any final words?
No. Should we get the reviews?
Oh,
I guess so.
Suppose.
Or is there anything else anyone wanted to chat about?
I'll get to one thing. I'll just general question. We never do this. We always review games. Oh. But are there any games you're looking forward to?
Hold that thought, because we've got a Big Adam joining us. So hold on.
Oh.
Mr. Big Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Sorry I'm late.
Welcome to the show. How's things going?
What's up?
No. Welcome to Flavor Country.
Things are going good. I got a job, so that's cool.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah, nice. I did.
Welcome to the job market.
Oh, yeah. The job market right now is absolutely heinous, and I'm glad to not be in it anymore.
Hear to that shit. I'm in it right now, but I'm also employed while I stay in it, so it's not bad, but goddamn, I want a better job now. Not tomorrow.
I'm okay in that department. Doing all
right. Ain't nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you got the job you want, I'm not going to tell anybody to get back into that shit show. But you're looking.
I mean, the job I want is Godzilla, but the job I got is customer support.
Well, I want to be Mothra.
Okay.
I guess we're mortal enemies, I guess.
I don't know if they're hiring.
No.
Is
Mothra and Godzilla are pals.
I thought they fought each other before.
They have.
But now they're friends.
I mean, they're friends sometimes. It's Godzilla's a capricious character.
Capri Sunish character?
A Capri Sun character. And sometimes he's a bad guy, sometimes he's a good guy, but Mothra's always good. So at the times when Godzilla is also good, then they're friends. So Godzilla's a fair weather friend, and Mothra is an all weather friend.
Oh, in that case, we're still friends.
Hooray, for now.
Well, forever, because we're going to change the tie once we get the jobs.
Well, it just takes the introduction of another monster.
So I'll be dropping Tabasco, tinted, dust all over the place. It'll be great.
Oh boy!
Like how so far we've talked about Perfect Strangers, the Langoliers, Godzilla,
Mothra.
Hey, he did ask what game we're looking forward to, and I answered the question.
True.
Did you?
Ooh.
Briefly.
Yeah, he said Sea of Stars.
I think
there we go. I didn't hear that. Yeah. It'll probably get purchased.
I haven't pre-purchased it yet. I don't know. Is there a physical version of it? I think somebody was going to do one, right?
At this point, if it's not coming out to the retail shops, I'm not even sweating anymore. The physical editions are still nice and all, but I feel like they've hit the mark where they're just like, we know people want this, so we'll wait until the people who day one want it buy it. Then we'll announce the physical so that they can double dip. But also, if you do get the physical, if you miss one patch or something, or you're not on the internet when you want to play at a certain time and you've passed a certain system update, you can't play it because you need a damn file change or whatever. So it's lost a lot of its luster.
I am
according to RP. According to RP. RP Jamer says Sea of Stars getting physical release in early 2024.
Yep, I am 8-bit.
Yeah. So they are releasing a physical copy of it, but it won't come out till next year.
Yeah, so it looks like I'm buying it digitally.
When's that one come out? Oh,
next week, apparently.
Next Tuesday. Yeah,
digital comes out next week. Have you seen much about that game, Sea of Stars?
I've looked into it a little bit. I've been focused on Blasphemous 2 coming out this week.
Oh, really? Have you?
Yeah.
Is Pernell's going to be talking about that one?
Was that intentional?
Was that a segue?
Nope.
That was purely accidental. Holy shit.
But,
He's going to hate me then. Oh, mercy.
Well, should we dive into reviews? Should we get to these? Because we got a handful to talk about tonight.
I only just met him. He's going to hate me. Don't do that.
Is that a yes? Should we start?
We could start.
Cool. First game to talk about tonight is Blasphemous 2, developed by The Game Kitchen, published by Team 17, released August 24th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Tenant One awakens as Blasphemous 2 joins him once again in an endless struggle against the miracle. Dive into a perilous new world filled with mysteries and secrets to discover. Tear your way through monstrous foes that stand between you and your quest to end the cycle once and for all. Arnell, tell us about your time with Blasphemous 2.
Okay, so two sets of full disclosure here. One, I've never played Blasphemous 1 aside with the, even though I own it in two different locations. And also, as a result of not having played Blasphemous 1, I got to tell you personally, the narrative for this game wasn't drawing me deep into it in the sense of like caring about the narrative or chasing it. But for folks who are down with Blasphemous for the narrative, I don't foresee you being disappointed because there's a lot going on here that seems to be like, yeah, if you like the first one's narrative, you're going to like this one too, I would gauge. But all I care about is the gameplay and the atmosphere and the like. And I can talk about that in Jiminy Christmas speed. So I'll get down to that business. So to my understanding, the narrative of this game involves the pertinent one, being reborn with the intent being to take down a creature known as the Miracle, which is being housed in a city that's being held above the ground by three giant statues. It's an interesting sight, but they prevent it to you. But when he is born, he gets to choose from three different weapons. A sort of cleaver sword, a dual rapier, which is like a dual-handed weapon, and a giant morning star. You choose the one you want to start with, but fortunately, you don't have to dig too deep into this thought process because you'll ultimately find all of the weapons as you explore the game proper. And that is a benefit because you will need all of them. But once you figure out which one you want, you will select it, and then you will get dropped back into the game world proper, and your adventure begins. Pretty traditional Metroidvania style of exploration in this game. A bunch of interconnected environments with a main hub city, which you'll eventually get to. And when you're in the hub city, you're able to spend the game's currency to purchase different upgrades depending on where you go. Actually, let me take that back. No, because the upgrades are like depending on where you freaking go in the map. They're not always in the main city, but there is like two vendors there by default. But anyway, you are able to go there and purchase upgrades and ultimately bolster your character up, and then you'll branch out from there to explore the world proper. As you're running around, enemies will be attacking you, and you're depending on the weapon that you chose will determine how you decide to fight or what your abilities are from the offset of the game. For example, I chose the dual rapier weapon, and the purpose of that weapon is it's not very powerful, but it does quick strikes, and it's focuses on guards and parry strikes. As you beat enemies up, you'll get experience points, even though they're not called experience. It's like Marks of Martyrdom currency, or you build up to Marks of Martyrdom. And when you get each time you get one, either through the leveling up system or through rewards for quests or just different things you do, you can spend those to upgrade your weapon to give it additional abilities. So initially, for example, with the weapon I'm describing, I didn't really find myself all that fond of the parrying initially, because parrying is really hard to pull off in this game. And when you do it pre-upgrade, all it did was just pretty much say, hey, you guard against this enemy, good job. Which, why bother doing that? You can just dodge the jerks. But eventually started upgrading it, and I became able to do like a lightning counter-strike when I did the when I pulled off a correct parry. And the beautiful thing about that also is that this particular weapon had a sort of charge gauge where when you filled up, you started doing lightning damage in general. And it's filled up by attacking enemies, but when I did that parry counter, it immediately filled up again. So it was, it gave me the reason to want to parry all the time. So it became kind of a fun thing to mess around with and do. As you get other weapons, you'll get different ways to do combat too, like the slow and heavy helm, you know, Morningstar, or like the middle ground cleaver. And you can switch between the weapons at will using the left bumper button. If you die, well, this one is an interesting game in the sense because if you die, your magic bar gets kind of hampered a little bit, like it gets kind of blocked off, so you can't use magic like you normally would, like to the fullest. But if you get back to where you died, so much like a lot of other games, like the Souls games and the like, you can pick up the essence that you dropped, and it will allow you to regain that bar so you can use your magic to the fullest again. In addition, though, every time you die, you'll develop something called Afflictum, which is not pretty much good for your character. Personally, I never let it get very far up the chart to see what it did proper because it has like a pretty much like a 100% gauge. And if you go back to the main hub town, you can spend currency to absolve yourself of those failings, which keeps you from having to deal with the consequences. And personally, that's kind of how I rolled. I didn't want to deal with it because this game's hard enough as it friggin' is.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of games that punish you for not doing good. Like, I'm already sucking. Why are you making it harder for me?
Yeah, I'm not too fond of that either, but I will say if the game gives you a decent out, as in to say, don't just fail constantly, but at the same time, you know, the way to recoup from the losses isn't exactly horrible for you. Like, there are games where when you die, you lose all of your experience points with no way to get it back. Like, I've definitely played games that did that, and I don't like when that happens, because depending on where you are in the game when that death occurs, retrieving that is a outright pain in the tuchus. So, no dice. Something I should mention for sure that is important in this game, and honestly, things I actually kind of like about it quite a bit, are the two different, I guess, character growth systems that are not adjacent, that are not of the weapon and strengthening variety. So there is an option, a thing called rosary beads. And it's just like a chain of beads that starts out with one available slot, but you eventually get up to about six or so. Sorry, five of them. And what ends up happening is, as you unlock each of these, you can slot one new item into these bead slots, and the slotted items give you various perks, like giving you defense buffs towards different types of damage, like fire or lightning, or the my typical favorite things, items that allow you to get experience points faster. Because I don't like the grind if I don't have to deal with it. And to me, the cooler thing, aside from the rosary beads, I'm not sure if this was in the first game or not, it's an altar that you apparently carry on your back. Think of this as like collecting action figures, but they're actually statues. And there's a person in the main hub that will allow you to slot these into your, I guess, your altarpiece. So the statues have various effects to them, just like I mentioned before. So, for example, you might get a statue that will give you basically more defense towards a certain type of skills, or I don't know, increases your critical damage or whatnot. There are four total crevices that you'll eventually be able to unlock, and each crevice has two slots. You can put statues in each of the crevices or each of the slots. And they give you their various buffs. But if you're able to find, compatible pairs for each of them, you'll get a bonus effect, which will make it it's kind of fun to experiment. Like, you'll find a new figure, you'll go back to the main town and go, wow, I got to kind of match this up with all the other figures I got to see if I can get a cool combination effect out of these things. And then, of course, once you find the cool combination effect, it might determine what statues you keep slotted in there, whereas if there weren't combination effects, there might be statues that you find less than useful, so to speak. So there's something kind of cool about that. And I do like the idea of like finding new statues and running back to see, trying to use it. So with that in mind, the game atmospherically and musically truly does shine for me. Like I said, I never played the first game. I heard a lot of people say, oh, this game is freaking gross. I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there are some gross elements to this game too. Like there's one particular NPC that's like a woman who's like talking. She's like, bring me essence and I'll give you more healing flask, which is pretty much like the essence flask in this game. But as you leave the room and then come back on subsequent trips, you see cherubs like ripping her skin off, and you see like this bloody hand that's just like kind of fawning to you, like, hey, come here. Like, no, I will not. Keep that shit over there, but thank you very much. But some pretty like general gross humor from it, whether it's the enemies or the NPCs at times. And given the world that this is, I'm kind of okay with it, though at the same time, it also has a world kind of like Dark Souls, where I can't imagine any individual wanting to live in this place. Nothing's pleasant. Even the places that are technically beautiful, they're only beautiful because I'm an outsider playing a game. If I lived in this world, I would still be terrifying looking to me. But yeah, the music is on point. Visuals are on point. Yeah, it's a beautifully scary game. Exactly. Like all these things are on point, though, from a artistic standpoint, and I'd like that very much. The game as a whole, like I said, the narrative didn't really chase me too much. It was basically find the four or main boss characters, defeat them so you can reach the miracle and defeat that. And I'm fine with it. I don't need a lot of games like this of the, I guess I'll say it, Metroidvania. I don't necessarily have to be vibing with the narrative or the plot to care, so long as they crafted a fun experience to get from point A to point B. And I feel like they nailed that here for sure. So if you like the story, you're going to like this game that much more. But for someone like me who wasn't jazzed about the narrative, I'm still enjoying the world they crafted, the weapon system they crafted, and the skill system that they crafted. So by all means, at that point, I feel like this game is an easy recommendation for folks, especially if you're a fan of the first game. And as a person who never played the first game, I say you can even play this without having played the first game. It'll still hit the notes.
Nice. Andy, you said you played this one, right?
I didn't play number two yet, no, but I was really into number one. I played that one pretty recently, probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And I mean, from the description, it sounds fairly similar. You know, a couple of different things, but it is a grotesque world, you know, full of demons, and you get punished for, doing bad, but it's fun. You know what I mean?
Oh, well,
first game had the altar system.
What was that?
Did the first game have that altar system I mentioned?
I don't remember, but like you were talking about the rosary beads, and I know that was definitely part of it. And then there's, of course, NPCs, you know, that are ripping their flesh off for certain items you find throughout the game, too. So
always fun.
You know,
ripping is just good, wholesome family fun.
Exactly. Yeah. I did a video on the first one, and I was like trying my hardest not to include just flesh, you know, but that was so hard to do.
Oh, man. Well, Pernell, Blasphemous 2 is $30. What's your verdict?
This is an easy buy recommendation. It's a quality product, quality time, and one that Metroidvania fans should not sleep on.
You said Metroidvania again.
Well, I already gave it. I was allowed to at this point. I've let it into my house. I invited it in.
I mean, you know, if Blasphemous gets popular enough, maybe they'll start calling it Blasylvania.
Blasylvania, Christ.
I mean, Metroid and Castlevania tonight, games
folks.
Are pretty.
Thank you so much for coming on. We're just out of time. We got to wrap.
What do you think of this game? What's a blasphemous like?
Well, I was just saying, like, there's fewer and fewer Metroid and Castlevania games around nowadays. So, like, the next generation's gonna need something.
Yeah, they'll call it Search Ash and cry about it.
Blasphemous,
rightfully so, mind you.
His Dead Cells is up there too.
Mm.
Anyway, next game to talk about is New Star GP, developed by New Star Games, published by Five Aces Publishing, released August 8th on Steam Early Access for $17.99. New Star GP is a fast and exciting arcade motorsport game with crisp retro visuals. Play career mode and work your way through decades of racing while upgrading your car into your support team, or chase high scores in championship mode on your own or in split screen with up to three friends. Big Adam, tell us about your time with New Star GP.
Dude, this game's great. This game is fantastic. I loved it. I had a really good time reviewing this one. It wasn't stressful. So yeah, let's just dig into it. Right off the bat, let me say that the styling and the music selection for this game grab you immediately. All right, I'm going to use the word simplistic a lot here, but you got to understand that this is one of those cases where simplistic is not a bad thing. In fact, the simplicity of this game is a lot of its charm to me. I love the new era of like down-rendered retro style games, but with the vividness and clarity and like sharpness of a new era game. It's got very simple electronic music, what you would expect in an older school arcade racing game. It's not too much, it's not overbearing, but it's also still fairly exciting in its retro electronic kind of way. Again, it's all about
the 80s rock in the game, like New Star GP.
No, and I mean, they didn't rip off Daytona directly. No, unfortunately. This game is again, it's all about the simplicity, which I really appreciated. It went for the nostalgia kick, and it definitely landed in the ballpark. You get started with a very, very simple tutorial, which goes over all the basics. You know, gas means go, brake means stop. You know, turning the car is cool. each lap, you get a tank of boost. Think Need for Speed Nitrous, but you don't have to do any crazy tricks to get it. It just refills on each lap. Gotcha. The other things you learn are like, please follow the fancy color changing line on the ground. You know, the typical racing game stuff. The controls in this game feel very arcadey and are very, very easy to get accustomed to. They're not really sharp. They're not sim-based. You don't really have to like plan your entry and exit of turning all that much. It's very, very simple. And something I was actually really, really, really hoping for. You also learn how to manage your pit stops, how to put fuel in your car, all while managing the types of your tires and things of that nature. And I know this sounds way, way, way more involved than it really is. But the reality is, there's three buttons, and there's very few choices to start with. And it does an incredible job of holding your hand, quite literally, in every step all the way through. Not in, like, an annoying way, just in, like, in an informative way, which I found pretty cool for people who don't, you know, huff virtual gasoline on the daily like I do. Then you get to go off and build your little avatar. Select some cosmetic options for yourself, select some cosmetic options for your helmet, some car design basics, you know, color palettes and stuff like that. Again, it's all pretty basic, and given the presets are actually pretty decent and have some variety, it's pretty easy to pick through and find something that looks pretty decent. From here, you're like basically ready to go, and you're taken off to the main menu where you're definitely given a few options like the promo said. You got local multiplayer, which is pretty cool and not terribly common anymore for people to be able to do couch co-op. And I think that's really cool with the advent of a lot of people doing PC gaming on the couch in a living room. Because PCs are so small now and so modular to run smaller games, you can do stuff like that. I think that's really cool. There's also like a time attack style or like a single player style. And then there's the actual meat and potatoes of the game, which is the Grand Prix mode, or the GP mode. I went right into the GP mode because I'm a speedy boy and I wanted to zoom. I mean, let's be real. Here we learn how kind of the game itself in the GP mode is structured. Each event has an open practice, a hot lap with a time limit, so it's basically like qualifying almost, and then a time trial gate clearing exercise. And then the GP race itself. All are repeatable except for the Grand Prix itself. So you can go back and earn rewards or earn rewards if you're on the cusp of like an upgrade or something like that on everything but the Grand Prix itself. The best times on an old exercise that you have done will pay out the rewards again. So every time you upgrade the score or lower your time, you get new rewards. And again, those being Those rewards are used to upgrade your team and the performance of your car. There's two different kinds. Again, all of this sounds really complicated, but the game does an incredible job of handholding and walking through things and explaining things. It doesn't just like highlight, hey, click this button so you're learning a muscle memory. It's also telling you why those things are happening so you can make informed decisions, which is always good. There are 10 events in total in the first era, and you are... That's pretty much when you realize now you start in the 80s era of like a Formula One or IndyCar style racing, and you're actually going to progress 10 races in the 80s, 90s, the 2000s, 2010s, and the 2020s. There's just a ton of content in the launch edition in this game, and they've already said it, that there are upcoming races, upcoming tracks. We already know that this game's going to have longevity, and they're just patch notes and their release notes. But getting back to where we were, we now have an avatar, right? We have a car. We have practice in. The time trial got smacked, and the gates were made our bitch. It's time for the big race. Let's get after this. The GP is underway. Okay, first, you start by going over your pit strategy, like I was saying before. Here you have the option to where you can either pit once with a hard tire, or you can pit twice with a softer tire. Now the trade-off is here, the harder tire has less grip, less traction, but it does have a longer lifespan. It doesn't get eaten away as fast by the track. Softer tires have a good bit more traction, a lot more bite, but they get easily eaten away, and they eat away very quickly over use, so they don't have the longevity. The crew chief in this game does slide me a hint, though, and lets me know that for this race, the one pit strategy with hard tires is more than fine. I go with the team on this one. One stop with hard tires, totally fine by me with less grip. I do like feisty cars anyway, so this is totally fine for me. The race gets underway. We get about a third of the way through, and I notice several race cars are pitting early, clearly using the two-stop strat, because they are fucking rookies, and that's apparent. I get the signal to go in about halfway through the race, and then that fancy racing line does take me into the pit according to the strategy, which I was actually kind of unexpected. I thought that was really cool, because to my knowledge, not a lot of racing games do that. With your pre-planned strategy. So I thought that was pretty dope. But anyway, I hold the fuel button with one hand, I change the tires to the hard ones like the plan was, and I get out of the pits. 9 seconds in total, not bad at all. I fight my way to second place, and about two laps from the end, I realized that I had made a mistake.
Uh-oh.
I realized that I didn't gas the car up all the way.
Oh no.
Got a little hype. I didn't have enough fuel, or at least I didn't think, to make it to the end. So, I still keep fighting. I get into first place on the last lap, and I am straight up on fumes. The only color in my fuel bar is red at this point. There's no orange remaining. It is only red. Yellow is a distant memory, and green is only a dream I can hope to achieve. Luckily, this game, in being very arcadey and very approachable, it doesn't just say, ha, your car's out of luck, you dumb idiot. You're done now, and you have to restart everything, and oh yeah, that's right, you can't restart the GP because you're a dumb stupid. It just cuts your max speed into like half. It basically limits how fast you can go very drastically. But I was ahead, I did finish the race, and I did have absolutely zero fuel. That gauge was empty. There was no red remaining. It was see-through, nothing but skies behind it. But still took my spoils of war, and it gave me enough to upgrade the car, gave me a little bit to upgrade my team, all of which give you better stats, obviously, better perks when you upgrade your team, and things of that nature. Then, just like after races, you have to do very quick little interviews that are multiple choice, that to, you know, keep people happy about your racing team and stuff like that. You're basically doing the PR. Doing cool social things definitely gets you good PR in this game. And, I mean, they tend to be the right thing to do. So I went with those. Not to mention you have to pick things that the team does in their downtime and between the races and between the qualifies and all that. And that definitely affects the team morale as well. It's a very cool concept. And I think they made what seems to be something would be a lot of effort or very, very complicated to get into. They made it fantastically approachable. And I can't say that enough. Again, simple is a huge compliment in this regard. This game was meant to be fun for anybody to play, but its target audience is obviously racing enthusiasts, and they wanted to make something that wasn't just like a stress ball to play when you're fighting for position and stuff like that in the other racing games you may be actually playing. From this point, honestly, it's a lot like other racing games. You got new tracks, new cars, new eras, three-year progression, the era progression that I was talking about before. For people like me, this isn't a bad thing. That's how racing works. You know, every week your team goes to a new spot, you race your car, you upgrade your car, you work on your team, you hire better people, and you have the money for them. It's just simplistic racing. That's how it really works. And I absolutely love racing. Y'all know that. So Joe, go ahead and hit me with it.
All right. Well, the game right now is $17.99 in early access. They expect the early access period to last a few months. They're aiming low on the amount of time in early access, but they said that the price will likely increase when more content is added. So for $18, should people get in now? Should people wishlist it and keep an eye on it? What are your thoughts?
Look, I think they knocked this game completely out of the park. That what they were going for, they nailed it in every aspect. I think this one's definitely worth grabbing in early access. I think especially if the price is going to go up, without a doubt. $17.99, you said? Absolutely worth it. It's low impact, low stress. It's very colorful. The gameplay is super arcadey, approachable, and fun. I'd say absolutely go ahead and grab this one for a good, good time.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Adam, that is it for you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining and hanging out. Before you get going, gotta know. What are your thoughts on the Rassels?
Ooh, in what regard?
You have an open floor right now to talk Rassel.
I think the current state of the wrestling universe is better than it has been since the late 90s. And I think that it is only skyrocketing in quality from all companies because it's a necessity at this point.
Yep.
You know, you have WWE, which is the absolute number one ticket selling, you know, the biggest US-based wrestling organization. It's undeniable. They have quadrillions of dollars. We get it. You know, they won. It's like the guy at the gym that is like 0.-5% body mass and he's like throwing the building. It's like, you don't have to be here anymore, homie. You already won the gym. AEW is going to England doing the biggest ticket sold wrestling event to have ever happened on the planet outside of Collision in Korea, which had more attendees, but they were forced to be there, so that doesn't count. Which, you know, is coming from a company that will probably always be second fiddle in the United States, but it shows what working with other smaller companies does for your business in other markets. They openly work with New Japan. They openly work with Lucha companies all over the world. They openly working with English companies now. They openly work with RevPro. They have this worldwide universe that everybody that's not WWE is participating in right now. And it's really, really cool to watch unfold because it's an endless well of dream matches. because this kind of stuff has never happened on this level before in any fashion. So I'm really excited that I've been back into wrestling for a couple of years now. I'm crazy excited about the future of pretty much pro wrestling in general, because again, they're all feeding off of one another and all making each other incredibly better. And I think that this coming weekend is going to be a lot of fun.
I can't wait for this weekend. All In is going to be nuts.
Absolutely.
I'm happy that I've been watching wrestling with you since the the start of the pandemic.
The start of the pandemic, yeah, 2020. We all started watching together. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and
it's
have very, very rarely missed an episode together. So
I don't think as a group we've missed a full week.
No, the group as a whole has not missed a full week since the beginning of the pandemic. That is correct.
Like, someone might miss here or there, but as a group, we're all still watching.
Oh, yeah. Week. Yeah, yeah. It's great. It's having a dedicated wrestling group that's all into AEW as much as I am. Oh, man. I didn't even mean to do that. That's like super hype on all AEW the way I am, and is also like old school wrestling nerds. It's been so much fun. So I'm glad to be a part of that, and I hope it carries on for quite the long time.
Same here, man. Same here. Thank you again for coming on, hanging out with us. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Oh, final words. Authentic Mexican food is incredible. I think that's all I got.
All right.
It just is, you know? It's delicious. It's absolutely delicious.
Tapatio. Use Tapatio for extra yum.
I use Tapatio on eggs. That is a A-plus egg sauce.
Yes, it is. That something goes good on damn near everything.
Mm-hmm. So does Old Bay hot sauce. It's delicious.
Oh, you former Baltimore.
I can drink that stuff like a 20 ounce. Let me tell you, it's so good. Oh, it's so good.
Old Bay Tapatio.
No, it's Old Bay. It's Old Bay hot. They made Old Bay beer, Dead Rise. I pretended to like it for a little while, but yeah. I mean, you know, it tastes like beer with Old Bay in it. It's as good as it's exactly as good as you think it is.
Nice. But, all right. Well.
All right.
Have yourself a good one, Adam.
You later, buddy. Do the same. Y'all have a great night.
Later, man.
Later.
Next game is Somerville, developed and published by Jumpship, released August 31st on PS4 and PS5. I believe the price, if it's the same as Xbox, is going to be $27.49. If it's the same as Steam, it's $24.99, but it's kind of up in the air. I don't have final pricing because it's not out for another week, so suck it. In the wake of a catastrophe, you must find the means to make your family whole again. Somerville is a sci-fi adventure grounded in the intimate repercussions of a large-scale conflict. Andy, tell us about your time with Somerville.
So Somerville is actually on sale right now on Steam. Special promotion for 50% off. So $12.49.
Very nice.
Pretty good. I don't play too many of these games, to be honest. It's a linear story driven game, you know. And usually I'm on some kind of Metroidvania, or I know how much you guys hate that term, you know. But or a platformer. But I thought it was really cool, you know. It's a sci-fi adventure. Basically, it's the story about a dad who loses his family, and the entire time you're going through and trying to find him again. So it basically starts off, you know, you and your family are sitting on the couch watching a movie, falling asleep, things like that, and there's all this commotion outside. The baby gets up and kind of, you know, pals around a little bit, and then the rest of the family gets up, and you go outside, and this huge, like, spacecraft or, like, space debris starts falling from the sky, you know, and you and your family are, like, freaking out and run back in the house, you know, and then try to make it to the car, and car explodes, you know, and things are falling around. It's just chaos, right, for a while. And you end up taking a little bit of refuge down in the basement of the house, a spacecraft lands on your house too, and there's this humanoid that kind of like pops out of the ship, you know, and is hanging out like in the basement, you know, just almost lifeless, but reaches out, and the dad goes, and the dad gets up and sees it, and kind of reaches out, and you guys grasp hands, and then sends this electric shock through you. The dad gets this strange vision, and then everything goes dark, right? And that pretty much sets the story off for it. So you wake up, and you've got this like strange power. So you can manipulate electronic devices or lights and things. And there's all this like alien debris everywhere, and you don't know how long it's been since you passed out. Your family's not there anymore. It's your wife and child, you know, but your dog is still there, which is thankfully, you know. And you have this power to manipulate all the space debris or the sediment from the alien spacecraft, and basically like melt it down. So the whole story, you kind of follow the dad through different landscapes, and it seems like it's been, you know, anywhere from a couple days, couple weeks, couple months since like this all went down. It doesn't really give you a lot of information on that. There's no talking throughout it. There's no dialogue, nothing like that, which is pretty cool. So a lot of it's like up for interpretation, but you get this power, and you use it to help you solve puzzles throughout the game, you know. And it's anything from, you know, manipulating this object here or that object there to create a new pathway, or open up an area, or get something to move and fall or react to something else. And eventually you get kind of like the other side of the power too, which is the ability to solidify any of the like liquefied, you know, sediment kind of thing. But the game overall is pretty much just exploration. I felt like a lot of the puzzles were very simple, like almost too simple. A lot of things are just kind of like I didn't really have to think about it too much. You know, I was walking through, and it was like, oh, you have to move this. Everything you kind of interact with is like an orange yellow color. And so walking through the landscape, you see something orange or yellowish, and you know, hey, I'm going to have to interact with that, whether it be a towel on a car door, you know, or a handle for a well or something, for example. You know you're going to have to interact with that. So that kind of made the puzzles a little bit simpler also. And then any of the kind of light, the liquefying or solidifying puzzles, were just kind of, I don't know. A lot of the puzzles seemed like an afterthought, in my opinion. The storyline seemed great. I really enjoyed it. The graphically, it is amazing. It's a
what, a great, what would you style call it? To it.
Two. Yeah. It's like the 2.5D or so. So you get a little bit of forward and backwards, a little bit up and down, and around. The landscape is all basically, you know, messed up by this large scale alien invasion conflict between, you know, and it doesn't really go too far into that too. It's like I said, up for interpretation. So it's these aliens and these other kind of humanoid aliens that are helping you sometimes throughout the story. These kind of dog-like creatures that are chasing after you. It almost reminded me of like Metroid Dread a little bit. Like if you've ever played that, you know, all the little aliens are coming after you. All the cyborgs or whatever you want to call them are chasing after you the whole time, you know. But like I said, graphically it looked amazing. Music score was amazing too. Overall, the story was awesome. There's a lot of endings to it as well. I think there's five different endings to this game, and so I was going through and trying to figure out how to do each of those. But it's all set out for chapters too. So if you want to go back and play any chapter throughout the story, it's there available for you too. But honestly, I thought it was an enjoyable game. You know, it wasn't too long. It was between, I mean, I guess depending on your play style, between 3 and 5 hours.
It's not that bad.
No, not that bad, but you know, I would say it was good overall, you know.
So your official verdict at the 25 to 27.49 price range.
So I would say the 25 to 27 is a little steep, a lot of steep. I mean, at that point, you're basically just paying for a graphics pack, you know. It's on sale right now, and I would probably pick this up for around $10 to $12. You know, it was an enjoyable experience, and if you're into this style, you know, the linear style storytelling game, it's awesome, you know. But I also don't see any replay value to it, you know. I went through the story, I thought it was good, and that's pretty much it, you know. So I would get it on sale, but otherwise, yeah, don't buy it for full price.
Well, like you said, it is on sale on Steam until the 27th for $12.49. So if you're interested, grab it there and give it a go. And if you've only got PlayStation, it'll be out next week. And there you go. You have your options. I think it's already on Xbox as well, so you could play it there too. But next game, Chrome Wolf, developed by Megatech, published by Kemco, released August 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Cruz is an Imperial soldier that has uncovered a lie behind a mission to suppress the rebel army. Continuing the legacy of a fallen comrade, he defects from the Imperial army and joins the independent mobile unit Chrome Wolf of the Freedom Fighters to seek revenge, atonement, justice, and ideals. What will the Brigade of Chrome Wolf find at the end of their journey? Chris, it's a new Kemco game that's not from X-Create or Hitpoint, so this is pretty exciting. Yeah. What's going on with this one?
Well, I mean, don't get too excited. This is a Kemco RPG. However, it is not new. This is not a new game. This game is a mobile Kemco RPG that came out first in 2014. So this game is almost 10 years old, actually. So that's one thing. So yes, this is developed by Magitek. Since y'all aren't a Kemco expert like me, let me pull up my tabs here and tell you what else they've done. So yeah, Magitek is a definitely a smaller developer who, according to the internet, are now defunct. I don't know. It's very hard to find information on smaller Japanese developers. So, but they definitely haven't come out with a game that's much newer than this one. So, but yeah, they previously came out with like Covenant of Solitude, which is another almost exactly the same game. There was also a mobile RPG, Soul Historica, which I believe stayed in Japan. Another mobile RPG, very similar. And actually, you know, I was like racking my brain because I was like, I know this style from somewhere. I know it's not X-Create, but it's like the other game that they put out that I know of is Grinzia, which came out on the 3DS, and it's actually among the first games I ever purchased on the 3DS to download. It was before I was even working with this show, so it's like, I believe it's actually the first Kemco RPG I ever played.
Wow.
In terms of like modern day, you know, mobile remakes, such as what we see from Hitpoint, X-Create, and these guys. So anyway, that's a little bit of history for you from Magitek. And that's Magitek, by the way, spelled with a C at the end, not like Magitek with a K that you see in Final Fantasy VI, but otherwise spelled the same. Okay, so Chrome Wolf is a basic mobile 2D RPG, kind of done up in I'm going to call it a Sega CD style. I found recently, especially now that I've played more Sega CD RPGs, that these do kind of fit that mold. It's like, aesthetically, you know, not the most modern or impressive thing, but they usually have a pretty good, like, yeah, you usually have fun enough battle systems and like stories, especially stories, and then like a CD quality soundtrack, but like Super Nintendo quality graphics. The character art notwithstanding, because these do have like very anime like character, portraits whenever they talk, but otherwise is very 2D. This one features, yeah, like I said, you start off in the army, and you know, the army is fighting against the rebels who are supporting the different race, the race that's not your race, because, you know, what's an RPG without a thinly veiled racism metaphor? The race of people, I don't remember if it was in the description, but if it wasn't in the description, it's a race of people that have horns in their heads. Do you want to guess what they're called?
Hornies.
That's pretty close. Joe, you got anything?
I was going to go hornies.
Unicornians.
Unicornians.
The Unicornians are
a pretty good one.
Are folks with horns in the middle of their head who are being oppressed by the army. You're in the army. Turns out the army's not up to any good. They're actually bad guys, and so womp womp, you turn heel, end up joining the rebel faction, and this story kind of follows your mission to take down your former employer, a dream we've all had. So, but the cool thing about this story is, besides everything I just said being kind of an RPG cliche, it's actually a well-written game. I noticed this about Grinzia when I played it too. It's wordy. There's a lot of text in this game, but you know, it does actually feel written. It actually does make you like care about the characters. It spends some time building, you know, what it can of like character relations and stuff. There's twists and turns. There's you know, little things here and there to keep you interested. And you better stay interested because, yeah, it's otherwise a little slow. Not only is the movement all very slow and also not great on the V-Sync, so there is a little bit of that good old screen tearing that happens when you're moving around. Folks who play the cheaper RPGs will know what I'm talking about. Or the expensive Final Fantasy Pixel remasters will know what I'm talking about. So apparently it's like the hardest thing in the world to keep down, even though, you know, basic ass Super Nintendo games did it just fine.
Mode 7, man. It was all about that Mode 7 chip.
Must have been. we need it back. Mode 77. Let's bring it to the future. Anyway, the game moves a little slow. The encounter rate is very high. There's no way to mitigate that aspect of it. So you better like being in a fight a lot. If you don't like losing fights, then this game features probably more cheat DLC, I guess you could call it, than I've seen in one of these RPGs. The game's $14.99, but the total DLC, if you want to purchase it, is about $23, spread out across, I believe it is 7 items that you can purchase.
I think it's
the normal,
six.
The average camp. Oh, it's quick. Six. It's six. Yeah, you're right. It's six.
Yeah, they have no encounters, no skill cost, double damage, triple experience, triple CP, and then a combo of experience and CP doubled.
Yeah. So that's about $23, I believe I calculated up, of extras that you can get in there. The way fights go is that they are, you know, enemies on the left, you on the right. It's going to be very familiar to the X-Create crowd because you have, your weapons in this game are all guns. This is not a high fantasy RPG in the least. Like, it kind of has a little bit of fantasy look to it, but I mean, it's guns and tanks, ultimately, is what you're dealing with here. Literally, we'll talk about the tanks in a minute. So, but yeah, you equip guns instead of swords, and your different guns can shoot different people in different ways. And by the way, even though it's guns, you're still fighting against like wolves and like mushrooms and like little sentient blob things. You know, it's like it's still RPG enemies, which is a little weird. Like, you mostly fight other people with guns in special battles, like scripted battles. But anyway. So it is a little classic RPG in that sense. They do have some of the classic RPG enemies. Any hoots. So yeah, you do different kinds of guns and they will affect like enemy rows or enemy columns, which will be very familiar to X-Create fans, and other players. They also like have different things like, you know, a Gatling gun will shoot like four times per turn. A sniper rifle will be able to hit the back row with accuracy. There's also skills and skill classes. There's not a whole lot of those, but you can change up your class and learn new skills, and those will transfer to other classes and stuff. So there's like, let's call it like a Final Fantasy V light aspect to the game. Real light. But that's okay, because the game's length isn't like long enough. It's not like epic length or anything, so you know, you're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna want a huge amount of jobs anyway.
I'll be honest, I don't go into Chemco RPGs for epic lengths. I like that they're usually shorter, more focused experiences. Like, you can grind if you want, but you're not gonna spend 120 hours going through a Chemco RPG.
Exactly, yeah. Or 89 and a half, like I did with the first Etrian Odyssey yesterday, actually. I finished it, finally. Thank you. Anyways, so, yeah, this is, it's interesting. Like, yeah, like I said, different guns affect the field in different ways. Skills affect different things. It uses skill points that you gain over time, or there's, like, limited stuff that you can do as well. And then, you know, there's two kinds of currency. There's a currency for buying weapons, and then there's the currency, which is the CP, which is for purchasing special shop items that enhance the game. And there's even side quests you can purchase with that, which is interesting. Those are like extra challenges and stuff if you want them. And they give you great rewards, but, you know, stuff that you won't necessarily need. But, you know, like I said, it's for folks who like to play extra and break the game and whatnot. Then there's the tanks. So eventually in the story, and also at the beginning, when you're fighting with the army, you have access to tanks, which you can actually switch to at any point on the world map, and even in a lot of the dungeons and such. Now, a tank, you know, is immune to, like, normal attacks. It does really high-powered, you know, cannon or tanky attacks. It's a very good tool. There's just two drawbacks to it. One is that you can't just heal it. You need a special item or to, you know, basically repair it at a, you know, in a way that's a little bit more out of the way than just healing your characters. The other is that your characters don't get any skill points for winning the battles, because they're just sitting in a tank. So it kind of, it kneecaps your experience a little bit, but, you know, it does help you get through the multiple encounters that you'll find along the way, so that's kind of cool. So yeah, like I said, aesthetically, this is on the lower tier of what you'll find, even from Chemco. You know, it's not a very pretty game. Even the soundtrack is not fantastic. The battle theme has some weird things that sound kind of out of tune about it. I kind of dig it, but it's not like Chemco, where it surprisingly has like a really good soundtrack despite the looks of it. Now this one actually looks and sounds kind of cheap. The quality here is in the writing of the story and the systems for battle, which are pretty good. Like I said, everything else is just kind of more bare bones. It will definitely, you know, it's a game that hasn't been touched in 10 years in terms of, like, new features or anything like that. I think literally all they did was drop in, like, this DLC stuff. So that's what you're getting out of this one.
Well, $15, your official verdict?
Well, $15, bear in mind that the mobile version of this game only cost $8. So this one has a pretty hefty Switch tax. 15 is actually kind of on the higher end, even for Chemco RPGs. So I would say this one is a try it. It has it has too many qualities for me to actually say to give it a miss. However, just know that you need to be in the camp of RPG enjoyers like me, who will, like, you know, who will play, give any, you know, just about anything a chance. And, you know, if I have the time, I'll complete something if it's, you know, if it's compelling and I can get through it. Like, this one, this is one that if I wasn't already playing, like, 10 more RPGs, I would put in the time to finish this one. So at that rate, 15 is pretty good. But like I said, there's a lot of Chemco RPGs you can buy for $15. And I would, as always, the top of my list is the hit point ones. Specifically for this one, oh man, I wish I could remember the title of that one I played that takes place in the desert. Maybe I'll figure it out, but yeah, it's a try it for me. It's solid, but not a winner.
Sounds good. Next game, The Life of a Magical Circle, developed and published by Solidio, released August 1st on Steam for $5.99. The Life of a Magical Circle is a narrated roguelite in which you dodge obstacles and pick up circles. Some of the circles are part of your goal, but some of them are just for fun. It's up to you to figure out which is which and try to stay focused. Andy, what's going on in The Life of a Magical Circle?
Joe, let me just say, I feel like you gave me some super easy games to review, so I really appreciate that. You know, first time on the mic, I was like, oh, God. And listening to everybody else, I'm just like, wow, I don't really have a ton to say about this very simple game.
Yeah, this one doesn't look too complex, but what's going on in this one?
So basically, it starts off with a little quote. It says, this is life, to know your purpose, then focus on it, and everything else is a distraction. And so, you know, that quote, you know, normally a quote shows up in a game and I'm like, oh yeah, that was cute, you know, whatever. But I started playing this game and, you know, it wasn't until hours later of me playing this that I actually really considered what they meant behind that too. So let me get into it a little bit. You are it's a very simple looking game. You know, you are a green circle. That's it. And you are controlled with your mouse. You have no other buttons. You can like kind of tweak the controls a little bit, which is cool. But as soon as you start going into the world, you kind of like moving the mouse, you know, it's a very fluid movement. You know, you don't have absolute control. So it's almost like you're underwater too, I felt like. But going through it, you have these like red squares that show up on the screen, and you have these red triangles that show up on the screen, and those are both bad. The red triangles like kind of seek you out, you know, and the red squares for the most part are pretty stagnant, but they move back and forth sometimes, you know. But anytime you hit one of those, you take damage, you know. And you, as this green square, or excuse me, green circle, you are collecting smaller green circles, right? And so the whole time, it seems pretty simple, right? But you have a voice in the background, kind of narrating, you know, your choices through the game, and kind of relating it to his own life, you know, if he had one. And coming through, and anytime you like kind of screw up, you know, they're like, oh, that was okay. Like if you had a shoulder, like just brush it off. Like it's all right, you know, and like kind of very encouraging, but also guiding you in a way, you know, to make the right choices. Then you have these other little orbs that show up on the screen too. One of them you collect and allows you to like kind of fast collect all the other green circles on the screen, you know. And one of them kind of protects you from any of the red objects, you know, and just it gets rid of them. So a fairly simple concept of the game. There's also one that clears the entire screen, you know, of enemies, obstacles, anything like that. But everything you start to realize kind of comes with a consequence, you know, whether good or bad. So the whole idea is you collect these green circles. And the more of those you collect, I think it was about 20 you collect, you get one extra life going on to the next run, which was cool. But it resets every time. So the next time, if you only collect, you know, 20, then you only get one extra life, you know. Pretty simple idea. Then you're going through and anytime you clear the board, you know, for example, the whole game kind of shifts. So for example, one time I cleared the board and the circle was like, you know, 10 times as big as it normally should be. And it made it really hard to avoid any of the objects coming through. And the narrator's all kind of talking about, you know, hey, the choices you make in life is this and this, you know. One of the times you turn invisible completely, which was just hell, you know, going through that. I died immediately every time. A couple of them are really cool, you know, kind of like fractal. Some of them are weird, you know, illusion based, you know, things. But the whole idea of it is everything comes with a consequence. So whether that be good or bad, you know, it's kind of up to you to figure it out. And now I was playing this too, and I went through everything and I was like reading other reviews on it and like seeing what other people thought, you know, and just to kind of get a good idea. And everyone's like, you know, this is a really zen game. Like, this is awesome. Like, this is really fun. Like, I just kind of relax and play this. And I felt like I was doing something wrong because I was having just the hardest time just getting to the end and beating it. And I would get so close. And then there's a section in there where I've got these red squares coming at me, and I've got huge, huge black holes, like sucking the main, you know, little character in where you can't move from. And then all these red triangles like coming and attacking me, you know? And so I'd pretty much die every time. But reading through it, I was just, you know, I was like, what is my problem? You know, and people are leaving reviews after like 5 minutes of play, you know, they're like, this game is awesome, you know? And so, I really had to,
it's good when a game is good that early, but I worry when people say it's like, oh, they left a review after 5 minutes. Like, did they give it enough of a chance?
Well, I felt like everybody that I had kind of read through, you know, was completing the game. You know, it sounded like, you
that's
know,
they're just like, not oh, yeah, a no, huge game.
It's not a huge game, no, but it does have the replay value to it, though. So I had to really kind of think about everything that the narrator was saying. I had to think about what was going on in the game itself, because I just kind of went into it, you know, just playing as I would any game like this, you know. But I had to kind of do this like introspective, you know, search in myself, you know, to realize like what the game is really about and how to get through it. And once I did that, I was able to beat it almost immediately, which was awesome. And so the game really takes this kind of interesting turn where, you know, you would normally play this style of game how you would, you know. But it really focuses on that concept that, you know, focus on what you're trying to do. Everything else is a distraction, you know, and you can make this game as hard or as easy as you want as well. So I found that really, really interesting. I thought it was a genius game, you know, and then it's so simple, but it's so like beautiful. You know, you've got a fractal environment in the background, you know, kind of a spacey feel. It's a single developer. I thought it was awesome. You know, it's not very a large cool game, but I thought it was great.
Well, it is $5.99. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say pick it up, you know, because like I said, it was really one of those things that I've got over 4 hours on this, you know, and four of those hours were me frustratingly going through the game, trying to figure it out. and then the last, you know, probably 15, 20 minutes or so I put into it, I blazed through it. Because I really started looking at myself, you know? And it's not very often that a game makes me do that, you know? So I thought it was worth it.
Very cool. All right, well, Andy, that is it for you. Thank you so much for coming on, hanging out with us.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate you letting me on here.
Yeah, we'll have to get you back on again sometime. We'll have to put you back to work and find something else for you to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, give me a little more complicated game. I can explain a little bit more about those things.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you guys so much.
All right,
well, don't leave. I want to say it was nice to meet you too. Oh, good.
Got you as well up here now. Yeah, thank you guys. Cool. I really appreciate it. Normally I write in. Good luck on the 900th episode, you know, next this Thursday, right?
Yep.
Perhaps you can write in for away. It.
I'll be here. I'll be here chatting, you know, for you. So
very cool. And yeah, do you have any final words before we let you go tonight?
Oh, shoot. Pick up Blasphemous 2, because it's going to be awesome. That's all I can say. Maybe Lords of the Fallen also.
Oh, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, that's going
to be... That one keeps confusing me. Was that supposed to be like a new game with a used title, or is it a new game in that series, but they kept the title? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read a reboot. I also read that it's like 1,000 years in the future. Does that sound right? And based on...
Butterfall and Mortal Kombat.
Probably.
I'm not sure exactly though, but
looks good.
But yeah, no, thank you again. I really appreciate it. I'll you know, keep writing in, and yeah, thanks for taking a chance on me. Appreciate it.
Cool. Have yourself a good one.
You as well. Later, guys.
Later, skater.
All right, next game is The Dragoness Command of the Flame, developed by Crazy Goat Games, published by P-Cube, released August 10th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $17.99. Dragoness mixes HOMM-like exploration, city building, and turn-based strategic combat with a roguelite twist. Choose your battles, paths, and skills as you explore a world ravaged by war gather and manage your army of beasts, collect resources, and expand your city. Brunel, what's going on in the Dragoness?
So this game takes place in a world where there is like a primary kingdom run by the Dragoness is under siege by a sacred dragon like Shavai. And your main character is pretty much hired on to come and assist with driving that dragon army out. However, on the way to the kingdom to assist them, you get killed like in the intro battle, which pretty much sets up the game proper. And the idea behind this game is pretty interesting how the platform works, because I've seen a lot of references saying this is like a similar game to Heroes of Might and Magic or whatever, which, believe it or not, I'd never played before, so I get none of those references, which is fine by me, because I'm enjoying what I'm playing of it right now as a newbie.
I didn't play it either.
Oh, yeah, so I mean, I feel I'm not alone in this whole predicament then.
Yeah, solidarity and not playing Heroes of Might and Magic.
I am the same way. I've heard so much about the series, and I've never played it myself. So we're in this together, guys.
That's what I like to hear.
We'll get through this.
So, but like, as it is with this game, so the idea is that as you start out, once you are killed, you are taken to the primary capital that is run by the Dragoness. And while you are there, you are told that you are dead. Kind of sucky. However, through the power of magic, you are resurrected for the sake of taking on missions. You get just like temporary resurrections. And it's interesting how that works, because by the way they do this, which I'll explain shortly, that makes up what the game considers to be a roguelike mechanic. At the beginning of the game, once you're established and everything is good to go, what ends up happening is you are told, okay, this is the base you are working from. Your base of operations takes place here. And when you are ready to go out to the field, the Dragoness will temporarily resurrect you. And this is done by placing your soul into a new body. And that body has a base loadout to it. So, for example, you might have a body that gives you a talent that will allow certain monster types in your army. And I'll talk about what the hell an army is in a few minutes. But allow certain monster types in your army to have like a better defense. You might have a version where it'll say instead of that, you might get a skill that will allow you to do like a start, have a specific type of spell early on in the game to give you a bit of a starting boost in that regard. And lastly, you'll get three abilities that will factor into turn end bonuses and your starting actual like stats for resources that you start the game with, your movements ability and your mana points. So once you establish that and you choose a mission, you go out into the field. The game takes on a sort of overworld exploration where your main character is walking around, and it takes place over a series of quote-unquote days. In a day, you get a certain number of movement points. You can use those movement points to kind of walk around and investigate different nodes that can give you things like resources that you can collect, or you can engage in various events that are strewn about the board. And you're just kind of walking around doing that as you try to look around, explore, fulfill the mission in order to fulfill the mission objective being presented to you. At the end of a day, you'll lose one resource that's referred to as like food, and you'll start again. What the hell is food? Well, earlier I mentioned, and I kind of briefly alluded to an army. And that's because in this game, your main character does not do any actual fighting. Instead, the fighting is done by an army of monsters that are under your command. Early on, you only have a few monsters, which you can kind of choose to purchase to take with you from your main base. But as you're exploring the world, sometimes you'll come across, whether it'll be an event or a mercenary camp, that will allow you to purchase new monsters using resources you've acquired on the map. So there's no actual gold, so to speak, in the game, but instead it might be like, hey, it's kind of weird that they do this, but like, if you can give me 15 stone, 16 iron ore, and 3 rubies, I will give you a griffin. And you go, sure, I guess. That's the going rate for griffins. Whatever. And you can spend the resources, like all of what you get that you acquire on the map, to get these new units. You have a max loadout of 6 of them that will be in your army at any given time. And if you don't have space to accommodate a new one, you can either just dismiss someone, or they have a sort of fusion mechanic where you can combine two like type and like rank monsters. And by doing so, you'll regain a character slot, and you'll also make one monster that's a bit stronger than the previous two were individually. It's not a massive buff, so it's not, I don't believe it's personally smart to just like discard a monster if you don't have to for the sake of making a stronger unit. But if you're in a situation where you're like, hey, I maxed out on my soldier troop, time to make a fusion, no harm in doing that just to get a slot back so you can get a new unit brought on board. So, again, I mentioned you explore the map, you look around for various resources or various events, but every once in a while you'll come across a douchebag monster who just wants to block the path that says, why the heck not? This is a free country, I'll do what I want. And at that point, you have a choice. You can either ignore them if the game allows you to keep going without going down the road they're blocking, or you can do the actual right thing and kick the snot out of them by engaging in battle. Battles engage at the point where you make contact with them, and then the game will take you to a new screen that is a grid-based map. All the army units that you've chosen will be on the left side of the screen, except for in certain situations where they kind of have like a special scenario battle. And all the opponent enemies that are in the army will be on the right side of the screen. At the bottom of the screen, you'll see the turn order of all the characters that can take a turn. And the battle will begin. Every unit has an armor stat and a health stat. Health can't go down until armor gets knocked down first. If you're lucky, you will never reach the point where health goes down, because at the end of a battle, armor regenerates, health does not. A character can do either a melee attack if that's their type, a ranged attack if that's their type, and in some cases, the monsters will have spells or abilities that you can invoke at the cost of mana that monster will have available to them. The mana spells they might have can range from things like, again, like reducing a defense of an enemy unit, or making it so they can't move as far, or reducing their attack or their ability to dodge. A number of things that will all be boons to you when they are in your army and you have access to them. But if you decide you don't want to do any of those things, you can either rest on a turn to gain mana back. You can actually push your character to the end of the round and let them act at the end of the round if you want, which I wish more games like this would do. Or you can just defend yourself. The enemy, of course, is going to be making similar judgments. You can watch what they do on the screen firsthand, though, if you want to investigate these characters and what their movement range will be and stuff like that. You can always press the X button, which takes you to the bottom that I mentioned where all the character portraits are for the turn initiative. You can scroll to them, press the right trigger, and it'll show you what their stats are and their skills. Though I genuinely wish, though, if I'm doing something wrong and I'm not doing this right, let me know, P-Cube. But I do wish that when you scrolled over, I wish two things. One, that you could just scroll over the character on the map and view their stats. There's no reason you can't just scroll to that character on the map, hit the right trigger, and see their stats. But apparently you can't do that. And the other thing I wish you could do is see what the hell the skills they have are, like what they do. Because you can see, or what they are, because you can see what their abilities are. But if they have a status effect invoked upon them, you'll see the icon for the status, but you can't like kind of give a quick glimpse and say, what are they affected by? What is it doing to them? All you know is, he's got angry eyes icon. I don't remember what that looks like. I don't know what that is. I want to see it, but you can't do that. Anyway, the combat takes place until the opponent, either the opposing army dies or your army dies. The opposing army dies, you'll get experience points. You may get some like reward loot, and it will show you the casualties of the war, like if your character's lost any actual hit points or how many enemies you defeated, and then you'll go back to the main the vessel map and you'll continue your journey. If you finish a day of exploration and you don't have enough food to feed your army for the next day, they will get weaker and weaker, resulting in them being less effective in battle. So don't run out of freaking food. Another thing that's cool about this game that I personally like, earlier I mentioned how you get three boons when you choose your character build when you get resurrected. Those three boons come into play here, because when you end a day, you are able to choose one of three temporary bonuses that are in effect for the next day. The most useful one to me personally is the one that allows you to move more steps for the next day. Because again, if you're running on a limited resource, you want to get, clear the map as fast as possible and access all the things you want before you run out of food. But if you see yourself coming up on like a need for a resource or you find yourself coming up on an actual skirmish for the next day, you might choose to use one of those bonuses instead. And heck, you might not even have the bonus that you typically like on a given day, because the game might not give those bonuses to you when you choose your class. So it forces you to kind of get a little, you know, touch and go to say, okay, I like what I like, but if I don't have access to it because none of the builds that were made available on this particular run that had it, I'll just make do with what I got. I'll balance it around. I find this game to be pretty fun. I do feel like the music's okay. It doesn't really sing or stand out for me. And the voices were kind of humorous. I don't know. They're not bad. And that's the most important part. Get that out of the way. They're not bad voices, but I do kind of chuckle at them. It's not like they got the janitor to do voices so much as he kind of got somebody's on the team that's like in a suit, but he's not professional voice actor to do the voices, but they're good, serviceable voices. I'm comfortable with them. I'm good for it. But the gameplay itself, I think, is pretty fun. I like the general flow of it all. I do wish that the battles were a little, not the battles were fun, because there's actually an actual speed up button at the top that I just never used. But I do wish that you could position the characters, I guess, kind of in a different way, because I do realize that the placement that you choose in, when you choose which slot you want the characters to be in on your army arrangement, that determines how far to the top of the screen they are when you start out a battle. But I wish you could arrange them in different formations instead of just all the guys are on the left side hugging the wall, like a freaking awkward gymnasium dance party, an eighth grade dance. That's what it feels like. Everybody's just hugging the wall when you start a battle. Again, except for certain narrative battles. I wish there was more, variations to that. That would come up more frequently. But I do like the combat in this game. It doesn't surprise, shouldn't surprise anybody, considering I like games like Brigandine, which is all about monster combat too. But I'm a sucker for games where you control monster units in an army instead of just generic old humans with shields and swords. Because monsters provide more variety and more customization for your units. Brigandine, so I is like a
deep
that.
Cut too. So,
I'd love me some Brigandine.
It's not a game that you hear often, but this one's clocking in at $18. What are your thoughts on the Dragoness Command of the Flame?
I forgot the name is longer than the Dragoness. I thought I'd stop there.
Command of the Flame.
I wish I could control the dragon as instead of her flunky, but the game itself is fine. I think it's enjoyable and a fun time to play. Just know that it's not a fast-paced game. It is slow and methodical as you explore the map and the such, but I mean, they're comparing it to Heroes of Might and Magic, which I've never played, but just by virtue of it being Might and Magic, you kind of expect it to be sort of slow anyway, slow and methodical. So I think it's a buy. It's a good time. Worth your time.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Extreme Sports. Oh, wait, don't we have a clip for this?
Extreme.
And now for Sportball Shenanigans
with Chris Taylor
on the SNL podcast. We tried to get Bob Costas, and he was all like, no.
That's right, Sportsball Shenanigans with Chris Taylor talking Extreme Sports, developed and published by WayForward, released August 15th on the Switch for $9.99. The Extreme Sports Showdown has begun. Play as Guppy or her boyfriend Finn as they visit Extreme Island and aim to become Extreme Sports Champion by mastering 5 events: skateboarding, street luge, inline skating, skyboarding, and surfing. Chris, tell us about your time with Extreme Sports.
Extreme Sports with the Berenstain Bears. No, I'm just kidding. That is a game that I own, also on the Game Boy Color, though.
The Berenstain Bears game?
Yeah, Extreme Sports with the Berenstain Bears. This is a much better game than that, though. So,
well, this is made by WayForward. I would hope it's a little better than Berenstain Bears.
It is an old school WayForward game. It predates Shantae. Yeah. It's part of a series that goes back to 1999 on the PC, but this is the Game Boy Color outing that came out in 2000 originally published by Infogrames, like everything was back then. But yeah, you'll definitely get hints of Shantae in this game, especially with the female character, which, Guppy is her name. So Guppy and her boyfriend Finn are, you know, they see it. There's an extreme sports competition put out by Evil ? Soda company. It's basically an extreme soda company, but you know, who knows. And yeah, they have the brilliant idea that they're both going to enter, and since they're both extreme sports enthusiasts. Now this is extreme spelled like the 90s way, like an extreme youth group at your local church. Xtreme. So that's no E at the beginning of that extreme. This is a history lesson for you younger audience members. We used to spell extreme this way. It was pretty great.
Yeah, it is a thing.
Yeah. which, by the way, the original box art for this advertises 5 extreme sports in one. But because of the weird way that the font is like kind of shadowed and like other stuff, if you look at it from a distance, it looks like it says 1 extreme sports in one. And I'm like, there needs to be a game that advertises that anyway.
1 sport in this game.
1 extreme sports in this game called Extreme Sports. There is 1 Super Mario Brothers 3 in this copy of Super Mario Brothers 3 in one. Anyway. Yeah, so this is basically it's going to it kind of reminds me the most of the Game Boy Color Mario's Tennis. Mario Tennis. Mario's Tennis is Virtual Boy. But it has you walking around as your character, and basically you first have to go and train in all of the 5 sports that you will be competing in one. And once you do that, then you're kind of free to roam around and challenge people at will. There's a story that plays out as you progress in the game. Your main thing is going to be collecting medals, which you can do by winning against other players who, you know, when you talk to them, they'll challenge you, and then you get to see how good, you know, what kind of record you're going to need to beat. There's 3 different things that you'll have that you'll be judged by. And if you win, you get a medal. Also, if you, you know, rode around in the garbage or just push the A button on everything, then you'll also get medals that way. I found out it's kind of got that, that Dragon Quest mini medal thing going on there, where you can either win them, you know, through hard fought battling or just look in this igloo ice chest over here.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, basically, like I said, it has the 5 games. You challenge your people. The 3 things that you're judged by is going to be the amount of time and the amount of points. So sometimes you need to reach a certain point threshold. Sometimes you need to reach a point threshold in a certain amount of time. So you can't go over the time that they went over unless you're also over on the points. Some of the games also include flags that you can collect. If you collect flags, then it may have a requirement for you to collect 5 of them, or 6 of them, or whatever, and it'll tell you what the person you're up against also scored. Not all the games have flags, though. Like I said, it's going to vary between the games. And what games they are? No, I'm just kidding. I mean, they are real games, so it puts it above Berenstain Bears in that way. The Berenstain Bears extreme sports game is just like, it's ski free, but painted differently. So it'll be like white, it will be skiing or snowboarding, but then blue will be like surfing, you know. But all they did was change the color. That's that kind of game. We shouldn't talk about it anymore. I played it like 5 times on stream even. Anyway. This one actually lets you surf. It's a side-scrolling surf game, which really reminded me a whole lot of TNC Surf Design's Wood and Water Rage on the NES, which is a game that I liked a lot as a kid, even though it only had 2 games and 1 song, but that 1 song was a real banger. it's a song for which I have personal history, too, but that's getting into the weeds. But yeah, it's a side-scrolling surf game where you can, like, collect stars in the middle, like you're trying to keep away from the bottom, and you're trying to keep away from sharks for some reason. I guess that's the extreme part, is that sharks can eat you. But they don't actually eat you, you just bump into them and fall into the water. I guess they're just docile sharks that you're abusing. But you can also pull yourself up over the wave and do a jump and, like, do some cool spins and stuff for extra points. And again, you're going to need those points to beat your opponent. So, like, that's, you know, the basics of surfing. Then you got skyboarding, which is a little bit like pilot wings. You know, you get dropped from a plane and you got to, like, basically collect things while also avoiding birds. But the things that you collect are actually, like, these, movement arrows. And once you collect all the movement arrows, if you push those buttons on the controller, you'll pull off a trick, which gets you, like, great bonus points and stuff. And then eventually your parachute, you know, works, thank God. And then you got to hit the target on the ground. And so, you know, you got to kind of guide your way over there and you get points for a landing. Then Luge is just, is actually just like the extreme sports of the Berenstain Bears. You basically go down a path that's like a scrolling downward path, and you try to collect stuff and jump ramps as you go by. Pretty simple there. Rollerblading is also a side-scrolling thing where you're ducking under obstacles, jumping over other obstacles, and trying to pick up those flags. You can go in either direction, but you need to go all the way to the right so that you can actually hit the goal in the correct amount of time. You can also pull off tricks there, like, you know, grinding and whatnot. And then skateboarding, which is the one I don't like, because you have to, like, use the controller to, like, build up momentum in a weird way, but then you can, like, pull off tricks. You can do flips in the air. You can also hold on to the edge of the ramp and, like, kick your board up into the air. I don't know what that's called, but it's worth a whole lot of points, so you got to get good at it. And then, you know, eventually just make your way towards the goal there and stuff. That was the one I kind of struggled with, but I did finally get pretty good at it, enough to compete anyway. But yeah, it's a very basic game. It's you know, it's got a really nice fluid animation. I really enjoy that. It's got character design that I would generously describe as horny. This is the same artist as Shantae, so expect to be ogling a 16-year-old girl for the whole game if you're choosing to play as her. It is what it is. But yeah, you do get a practice mode, which is nice. You get to save your game, which is cool. The externals are that you can load and save state. You can choose from a full screen, native resolution doubled. You can also turn on an LCD filter, which actually does look like, it makes it look like a Game Boy Colors LCD. It's actually not a bad filter. It's one of the filters I actually could play with it on, but of course you can turn it off, and you probably will. You can choose from some borders, including two different limited run games branded borders, which is kind of cool, I guess. Also a purple Game Boy Advance border, which I like because that's the color of mine. And that's really it. I mean, it's the game. It's just a few little perks here and there. There's no issues I can find. I mean, nothing looks out of place on it. I don't own this cartridge on the Game Boy Color, so I can't super speak to the accuracy of it, but it definitely feels like a Game Boy Color cartridge. And again, it's pretty darn fun. So yeah, this is no Berenstain Bears involved here. So that's good.
Cool. Well, it clocks in at $10. What are your thoughts?
I mean, $10 for a single Game Boy Player game port. That's trending a little high, but honestly, I mean, you know, it's like I said, it's they are pricing it to compete with things like Shantae and stuff, so you know, it's it may have that pedigree to it that will drive folks to the eShops to pick it up. I'm gonna say, due to the amount of content and type of content, it is a buy it, but you know, I'm gonna say too that, you know, classic games for $10, you can probably find something you like more, but you know, it's pretty extreme.
And you will have to go to digital storefronts for this if you were interested in a physical version. It sold out months ago, so sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's limited run. Nothing you can do.
Yeah. All right, well,
physical version of the Game Boy card on the Switch?
Huh?
I may have misheard that.
No, there's a Game Boy version and a Switch version. Separate.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So you could buy like a reprint of the Game Boy version. Boy.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't even check to see how much the original cartridge was. I'm actually not able to find it. So
went on eBay or anything?
Yeah, let me try Game Boy Color. Let's be specific here. Yeah, the used price on. Okay, so the used See, price
car
on
only like for like got, 40, 50.
Yeah, I have a $25 one here. But then right next to it is Game Boy Color game Extreme Sports, and it's Extreme Sports with the Berenstain Bears for $4.99 used, but they didn't specify that it's the Berenstain Bears version, so I think that's very funny.
I also see a game called Extreme Wheels, which is a BMX.
Oh yeah, game. Yeah. I heard of that one. Also, anyway. Mega Man Extreme, which is the Mega Man X games, but in 8-bit. They're actually very good, but they are spelled Extreme because
I love it.
Late 90s, early 2000s.
I actually like those games because they did that thing where they would kind of take some of the robot masters from one game and then some from the other game and kind of fuse them in. So it felt sort of new because of that.
Yeah, it's a long-standing tradition. Anyway.
Anyway. Speaking of old stuff, like I said, we are going to play some music from Mustin to end the show. The Perfect Strangers theme song. As long as we don't get a copyright strike on it, that should be the music that ends the show. If it's not the music that ends the show, whoops.
You'll know what happened.
Does anyone have any final words to end this show?
Skydiving. It's a sport that's extreme. That's it.
Stop me, motherfucking now.